Hi, I'm Dr. Ann Peters, and today I'm going to talk about the American Diabetes Association 2014 Standards of Care. Now, first off, these standards of care aren't that wildly different from the standards of care for prior years. These standards are a gradual evolution based on the knowledge that we gain from year to year. But I think it's important to really review the key points each year and talk about what's different. But another important point about these standards is that increasingly standards from different organizations are becoming different with regards to patient management. So, for instance, the American Heart Association guidelines on the treatment of lipids in the patient with diabetes now is somewhat different from those found in the ADA guidelines. Guidelines for the treatment of hypertension are increasingly different. How to even screen for something as basic as gestational diabetes has two different approaches. So I think that it's important that we reconcile within ourselves knowledge both of all the different guidelines, how they fit for each one of our patients, and then come up with what is one of the key headlines to this set of standards of care, which is individualization of care. Now, as a practitioner, I kind of bristle at the fact that perhaps I wasn't individualizing care for my patients for all these years. But I think it's important that really everybody realize, from the patient to the provider to the insurers to the people who are measuring our outcomes, that it is incredibly important to assess each patient's situation, their needs, what we really think is best for that patient, and then proceed from there. So I think it's very important that we think about things such as A1C targets on an individual level. I think it's very important to keep the A1C as close to normal as we safely can, but that's going to vary based on the patient's clinical circumstances, their age, their risk for hypoglycemia, and a number of other factors. So even though I think I'm a good diabetes doctor, I know that I have patients who have A1Cs of 10% that for complicated reasons I can't get lower. And I also know that I have many patients who are at target who have A1C levels less than 7 and even in some cases safely less than 6. So I'm willing to admit that I individualize targets, and hopefully all of you will as well. And I would refer you back to these standards of care to read them more fully once you've watched this video, so you can really familiarize yourself with what's out there in terms of the recommendations. But first off, let's just talk about diagnosing diabetes. So there are four basic ways we can diagnose diabetes. The first is relatively simple: a patient who's markedly symptomatic and has a blood sugar of greater than 200, that's somebody who has diabetes. But there's three other tests for asymptomatic patients, which is measurement of the hemoglobin A1C level, measurement of the fasting glucose level, or measurement of a two-hour post-75-gram oral glucose tolerance test. Now, we don't use glucose tolerance tests much anymore, at least I don't, for routinely diagnosing diabetes. And in fact, that two-hour value is the least reliable test for diagnosing diabetes. A more reliable test is the hemoglobin A1C level, but even this can vary based on certain factors such as hemoglobinopathies, hemolysis, etc. And finally, there's the fasting blood glucose level, which in general is pretty stable, but again, it, like any laboratory assay, can vary. So the ADA suggests that we do one test to see if somebody is likely to have diabetes, and then repeat that test, that same test, to verify that that value is true. Now, there may be patients where it's clear that the patient has diabetes, you're satisfied that that one test is accurate, but in many cases, because there can be errors, it seems reasonable to repeat a test, ideally the same test. But if you get a second test and there's some discordance between the two tests, then repeat the test that seems to be the highest to get some sense of really where you stand with the patient. And for many patients, you may not get absolute answers, especially people who are sort of on the border between diabetes and prediabetes. And for those patients, because glycemia exists in a spectrum, it's not a start and stop phenomena, you can always watch the patient for 3 months and then retest in 3 months and see which direction the patient is going in. But to diagnose diabetes, you want to have a fasting glucose of greater than or equal to 126 and or a hemoglobin A1C level of greater than or equal to 6.5 or that random glucose of greater than 200 in a markedly symptomatic patient or a 75 gram 2 hour glucose level of greater than or equal to 200. So once you've diagnosed somebody with diabetes, then you need to set treatment goals and a treatment plan, and that's fairly standard and is outlined in the standards of care. But I think importantly, and somewhat different in these guidelines, it is discussed how often patients with diabetes should be monitoring their blood sugar levels. So in patients who are on multiple daily insulin injections or an insulin pump, patients in those categories should be monitoring their blood sugar levels as frequently as they need to. And in general, that's before meals and snacks, at bedtime, if they're going to drive, if they feel hypoglycemic, after eating from time to time to get a sense of the postprandials, somewhere in the range of 4 to 6 to 8 to 10, maybe more times a day, but generally probably around 6 to 8 checks daily. Now, this is actually at some variance from what patients are often allowed in terms of test strips, and I spend a great deal of time trying to get my brittle, older type 1s to have coverage for enough strips, but I think it's important to fight for because people, as they get older, develop more episodes of hypoglycemia. We want our patients to have enough strips to test. On the other hand, if a patient's on oral agents and is pretty stable, they may not need to test much at all. But what the standards of care really stress is that patients who are not on insulin, who are doing self-monitoring of blood glucose levels, that they should do that in accordance with a therapeutic plan, meaning we tell a patient to test, to in some way respond to that number, to call us with the number, to change their lifestyle based on that number, to do something, to have a therapeutic plan based on those blood sugar levels, because to just test blood sugar levels and not change therapy is somewhat of a waste of time. Now, a big diagnostic area where there are differences comes from screening for gestational diabetes. Now, I was taught to screen for gestational diabetes with a random 50-gram, one-hour glucose tolerance test. It's not really a traditional glucose tolerance test. It's just 50 grams of glucose and a blood sugar after that. And then if the patient does not fit within the criteria, they then go on to a full 3-hour oral glucose tolerance test to diagnose gestational diabetes. Well, that method is still one approach. It's actually an approach that's currently suggested by the NIH, but the American Diabetes Association and others have actually also promulgated an approach that's just a one-time test, and this is a 75-gram oral glucose tolerance test. There's no 50-gram screen. The patient comes in at 24 to 28 weeks of gestation and has the 75-gram glucose tolerance test, and then based on the cut points, is determined to have gestational diabetes or not. Now, this one test method, the 75-gram screen, will actually diagnose more patients with gestational diabetes than the traditional approach. And because there's really no consensus as to which is the best approach, frankly, you can use either approach and use the approach that you're most comfortable with, but just be sure to screen and follow up with your patients to be sure they don't have gestational diabetes and need to be treated. There are new nutrition recommendations that actually came out in October that are now included in these guidelines and should be really reviewed, but the key is there's no one right way to lose weight. There's no one right diabetic diet. In fact, it's really medical nutrition therapy, meaning we're really trying to get patients to have and follow a healthier lifestyle, not to be on some fad diet and suddenly lose a bunch of weight only to regain it. But we want to encourage our patients to have healthier habits so that throughout the time that they have diabetes, they have a healthier approach to eating that just doesn't start and stop when they go on and off a diet. But I can't do the whole new set of recommendations justice here, but I would recommend that you read them. In terms of two other areas, the lipid treatment area hasn't changed based on the American Diabetes Association, which means to treat patients to an LDL target of less than 100 or less than 70 if they're high risk. But I think in accordance with the new American Heart Association guidelines, it's very important to consider every patient of ours who has diabetes, who's older than the age of 40, as somebody who likely will need to be put on statin therapy, and the intensity of the statin therapy may vary based on whether or not the patient has a high risk for future cardiovascular events or has had a cardiovascular event. But really think hard about use of statins in patients who are over the age of 40 with either type 1 or type 2 diabetes. There's less data on type 1s, but I do know that they're at increased risk for cardiovascular disease. And although I think that in those individuals we may need to individualize therapy more than perhaps the population with type 2, we still need to think about it in both groups and treat accordingly. And finally, hypertension. The hypertension treatment target is now to reach a target of less than 140 over 80 in most of our patients with diabetes, although a lower target may be recommended in younger patients. It is not recommended to use ACE inhibitors or ARBs for the prevention of nephropathy in patients who do not have an elevated blood pressure level. So that's just sort of an outline of the 2014 ADA standards of care. And again, I'd encourage you to read through them. There's the full report online as well as an executive summary if you want the short version. But hopefully you will review them and continue to treat your patients with type 2 diabetes to their own individualized targets. This has been Dr. Ann Peters for Medscape. Thank you.